Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Left Behind, the Rapture story, right after this message. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider. An insider like John Swinton, for instance. He was the former editor of the New York Tribune. Here's what he said to the New York Press Association on February 26, 1936. Swinton said this: "There's no such thing as a free and independent press in America, unless it's in some country town. And there's not one of you who dares to express an honest opinion because you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid $150 a week," he said, "for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid for doing similar things. Now, if I should permit my honest opinions to be printed in one issue of my paper, like Othello, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Our business is to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of Mammon, to sell his race and his country for his daily bread. We are," he said, "the tools of rich men behind the scenes. We are intellectual prostitutes." Unquote. Well, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and the New World Order. They're men and families like the Windsors, the Rockefellers, the Bushes, the Bundys, the Carnegies, Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time for us to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and the New World Order, why don't you call and order my 4-hour compact disc package? It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, best of all, it's free of charge. Now, you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, just go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send an email request. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. 4967. All right, last time we were talking about the news media. Do they tell us the truth or do they lie to us? And we discovered in the case of the Fox News down in Tampa, Florida, that they lie. In fact, two investigative reporters doing a story on Monsanto and the dairy industry were told, "Don't put that on the air." They were not allowed to put the story on the air, not because there were any errors in it, but because the story was true, and it would expose Monsanto and the dairy industry, and the station didn't want to get sued by Monsanto, and they didn't want to lose the advertising revenue from the dairy advertisers. Now, there's three ways that we can lie to you, three ways to deceive you. We can directly lie to you by telling you some statement, making some statement to you that's untrue. Just one straight, bald-faced lie. Or we can do it another way. We can tell you the truth. We can mix that truth with some lies so that the ultimate outcome is that you will believe something that's not true or not wholly correct. Or third, we can withhold the truth, or we can withhold some of the truth so that you will come to an erroneous conclusion. Now, what we're learning here is that this is being done on a regular basis. It's being done by the Pentagon. It's done by government. It's done by Madison Avenue. It's done by corporate America. It's done by the news media. And I contend that if you don't have all of the facts, you can't come to a rational conclusion. If you don't have both sides of the story as it relates, let's say, to evolution, then you're going to come to a lopsided belief or a lopsided conclusion. For instance, have you heard the story that sex with a virgin cures AIDS? Have you heard that? It comes out of Uganda and some other third world countries of Africa, where many people, particularly men, believe that if they can have sex with a virgin, it will cure their AIDS. Do you believe that? Well, if you don't believe that, why not? And if you don't believe it, why do those who practice that degenerative practice believe it? Where did they get their information? Smoking does not cause cancer. Do you believe that? If so, why? Where did you get the idea that smoking does not cause cancer? Or if you believe that it does, where did you get the belief that smoking does cause cancer? What persuaded you that smoking is bad for your health? Global warming causes tidal waves. I just heard that the other day. It was on a news report, and they were asking the question, was that tidal wave over in the Indian Ocean caused by global warming? Well, evidently there are some people out there that believe that. Do you believe that? Is it a rational belief? Does it have any basis in science or the Bible or Scripture, or does it have any basis in anything? Or is it just a belief? And if so, where does it come from? Evolution is an established scientific fact. Do you believe that? Listen, tens of millions of people believe that evolution is an established scientific fact, and anybody that doesn't believe it is backward and uninformed. I don't believe that. I must be backward and uninformed. Where did I get my crazy beliefs? Now, Christians believe that Christmas is Christ's birthday. Well, at least most Christians believe that. Is it true? Vaccination does not prevent disease. Vaccination does not prevent disease. What's your belief on that statement? Many people believe that vaccination cures disease or prevents disease. Even better yet, many don't believe that vaccination cures disease at all. Paper money is good for a nation's economy, and Americans have believed that and practiced that since 1913. The opposite view is gold and silver coin is bad for our economy. Paper money is good for the economy. Gold and silver coin is bad for the economy. And then there's an opposite view. The opposite view is that gold and silver coin is good for the economy and paper money is bad for the economy. Well, which is it? Can both sides be holding to the truth? Well, it doesn't make any sense to me. And that's why I thought I would raise this issue. Now, take a look at this. In the 1950s, the majority of the American mass media, for example, TV, radio, film, magazines, book publishers, advertising agencies, and newspapers in the United States were owned by more than 1,500 corporations or individuals. That's back 50 years ago in the 1950s. Today, that number is down to six. Six corporations own the majority of the American mass media, including radio, television, film, magazines, book publishers, advertising agencies, and newspapers. Now, that's a pretty significant statistic, wouldn't you say? That's a pretty significant change. And what it does is it gives those that control the information in America an ability to deceive, to lie, to misrepresent, which has never existed in this country before. Now, let me run by some of the protocols of the learned elders, keeping in mind now that in the 1950s, the majority of the American mass media, TV, radio, film, magazines, book publishers, and advertising agencies were owned by 1,500 corporations. Today, that number is down to 6. Now, listen to these statements, and let's see if they correlate with what we see going on around us today. The fourth protocol says, it is for this reason that we must undermine faith, eradicate from the minds of the Gentiles the very principles of God and soul, and replace these conceptions by mathematical calculations and material desires. The fifth protocol. We will so wear out and exhaust the Gentiles by all of this that they will be compelled to offer us an international authority, which by its position will enable us to absorb without disturbance all of the governmental forces of the world and thus form a super government. We must so direct the education of Gentile society that its hands will drop in the weakness of discouragement in the face of any undertaking where initiative is needed. When we become rulers, we shall regard as undesirable the existence of any religion except our own, proclaiming one God with whom our fate is tied as the chosen people, and by whom our fate has been made one with the fate of the world. And for this reason, we must destroy all other religions, and if thereby should emerge contemporary atheists, then as a transition step, this will not interfere with our aims. That's the 14th protocol. The world or a world coalition of Gentiles could cope with us temporarily, but we're assured against this by roots of dissension among them so deep that they cannot be torn out. We have created antagonism between the personal and the national interests of the Gentiles by arousing religious and race hatreds, which we have nourished in their hearts for more than 20 centuries. The administrators chosen by us from the masses for their servility will not be persons trained for government, and consequently, they will easily become pawns in our game, played by our learned and talented counselors, specialists educated from early childhood to administer world affairs. And as we know, our specialists have been acquiring the necessary knowledge for governing. That's the second protocol. The 13th protocol says this, to prevent them from really thinking about anything themselves, we shall deflect their attention to amusements, games, pastimes, excitements, and people's palaces. Such interests will distract their minds completely from questions on which we might be obliged to struggle with them. Becoming less and less accustomed to independent thinking, people will express themselves in unison with us because we alone offer new lines of thought. Of course, through persons whom they do not consider as in any way connected with us. The 14th protocol, in this divergence between the Gentiles and ourselves in ability to think and reason, is to be seen clearly the seal of our election as the chosen people, as higher human beings, in contrast with the Gentiles who have merely instinctive and animal minds. They observe, but they do not foresee, and they invent nothing except perhaps material things. It is clear from this that nature herself predestined us to rule and guide the world. We shall handle the press, the 12th protocol, in the following manner. We shall saddle it and keep tight rein upon it. We shall do the same also with other printed matter. For of what use is it to rid ourselves of attacks in the press if we remain exposed to criticism through pamphlets and books? Not one announcement will reach the people save under our supervision. We have attained this at the present time to the extent that all news is received through several agencies in which it is centralized from all parts of the world. Literature and journalism are two most important educational forces, and consequently, our government will become the owner of most of the journals. If we permit 10 private journals, we shall organize 30 of our own, and so on. And this must not be suspected by the public, for which reason all of the journals published by us will be externally of the most contrary opinions and tendencies, thus evoking confidence in them and attracting our unsuspecting opponents, who thus will be caught in our trap and rendered harmless. And the first protocol, our triumph has been rendered easier by the fact that in our relations with the men whom we wanted, we have always worked upon the most sensitive chords of the human mind, upon the cash account, upon the cupidity, upon the insatiability for material needs of man. And each one of these human weaknesses taken alone is sufficient to paralyze initiative, for it hands over the will of men to the disposition of him who has bought their activities. Now, those are called the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, put out in 1884. Whether you believe them or not, it's irrelevant. It's already an accomplished fact, and that's what we're discussing. Now, where did this mind control concept come from? How has it been implemented? Who is implementing it today, and are you a victim of it? Now, going on, remember, we're talking about an article here in Nexus magazine, so let me give you a couple of numbers here so that in case you want to check up and find out if I'm lying to you or not. The full article that we're covering here with references is available. It's called Information Control for Social Manipulation. The entire master's thesis is available at www.nexusmagazine.com. It's free, 48 pages. You can download it yourself. www.nexusmagazine.com. It's written by David Desereno, MS, copyright 2003. Now, let's continue on. Listen to this. Now, before he retired, AOL Time Warner CEO Gerald Levin told MSNBC that his company's internet division had already helped terror investigators, apparently providing access to email traffic. According to Jeff Chester, executive director of the Center for Digital Democracy, there is an implicit quid pro quo here. The industry seems to be saying to the administration, we are patriotic, we are supporting the war, now free us from constraints. Although that may or may not be true, on June 2, 2003, the Federal Communications Commission voted 3-2 to relax the rules on media ownership. Now remember, media ownership in this country is down to 6 corporations now. So just these 6 institutions control more than half of all of the information that you receive. These 6 control more than half of the information that you receive. Now, after World War II, Allied forces restricted media concentration in occupied Germany and Japan because they noted that such concentration promoted anti-democratic, even fascist political cultures. In the 1950s, the majority of the American mass media, for example, television stations, radio stations, film studios, magazine publishers, newspaper publishers, book publishers, advertising agencies, were owned by more than 1,500 corporations. By 1981, they were owned by fewer than 50. Today, that number is 6. And AOL, Time Warner, the Walt Disney Company, Bertelsmann, Viacom, News Corporation, and Vivendi Universal, along with Sony, Liberty Media Corporation, and General Electric close behind. In our current electoral process, reaching audiences has become the substitute for what used to be called garnering constituencies. Just as advertisers sell products to audiences, political consultants market candidates to those same audiences. In contemporary media-driven elections, program, advertising, and film audiences become targeted markets of voters. Now, in the larger sense, citizens are transformed into consumers, connecting with a media product instead of a political platform. News Corporation, the fifth largest media corporation in the world, owner of 20th Century Fox, Fox Television Broadcasting Corporation, including all subsequent Fox channels such as Fox Sports, Fox Movie Channel, as well as FX and the National Geographic Channel, magazines such as The Weekly Standard, Inside Out, and TV Guide, newspapers such as The New York Post in the United States, and 22 papers in Australia, 9 in England, including The Times, The Sunday Times, and The Sun, as well as the publishing houses HarperCollins and Regan Books, is owned by Rupert Murdoch. Remember that name, Rupert Murdoch. Now, Murdoch has used his media power to nuzzle up to some of the most influential leaders of recent history, including Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, Margaret Thatcher, and Tony Blair. Or rather, they have nuzzled up to him. And in the case of Tony Blair, in exchange for the support and endorsement of Blair in Murdoch's publications during his campaign, Blair, once he was elected, was able to change British policy on media ownership into Murdoch's favor. In fact, Rupert Murdoch himself has been quoted as saying, "When you are the monopoly supplier, you are inclined to dictate." Now, during the first Gulf War, each of the big three networks had profound financial ties to the war. ABC was owned by Capital Cities, which is now owned by the Walt Disney Company, whose chairman was on the board of directors of Texaco Oil Company. CBS, at the time owned by Westinghouse, though now owned by Viacom, also owned the Rand Corporation and the Honeywell Corporation, both of which were and are major defense contractors and stood to make a great deal of money out of the war. NBC was, and still is, wholly owned by General Electric, which had a $2 billion weapons contract with the U.S. military, making both the Tomahawk and the staggeringly unsuccessful Patriot missile, and it was estimated that they'd made hundreds of millions of dollars more with the rebuilding of Kuwait after the war. And also the Kuwaiti royal family were major GE stockholders. General Electric CEO John Welch reportedly once told NBC President Lawrence Grossman, "Remember, you work for GE." Now, the simple fact is that in most traditional newsrooms, the culture of journalism is to determine the basic nature of a story before assembling all or even most of the facts. Just as many theorists develop a working hypothesis before collecting the data, many journalists are used to formulating the angle or frame of a story before they interview anyone, read any documents, or collect any other facts. Sometimes they're more apt to follow the adage, "Never let the facts get in the way of a good story." Now, why is this? Well, there are many reasons, but a major reason continues to be that the changing economic structure of the television networks has eroded their newsroom values. Where once a culture committed to great journalism flourished, a culture dominated by MBAs and financial accountability has now taken its place. Accountability to shareholders to make money has replaced accountability to democracy and to the citizens that it serves. Now, think we have free speech in this country? Well, not if you're on television. Just ask Bill Maher, Soon after the September 11th attacks, Marr, in response to the labeling of the hijackers as cowards, said on his late-night ABC program called Politically Incorrect. He said, quote, "We have been the cowards lobbing cruise missiles from 2,000 miles away. That's cowardly. Staying in the airplane and flying it into a building, say what you want about it, but that's not cowardly." Less than a week later, Marr's show, Politically Incorrect, was canceled. So much for free speech. During a March 10th, 2003 concert in London, the Dixie Chicks lead singer, Natalie Maines, told her audience, quote, "Just so you know, we're ashamed the President of the United States is from Texas," unquote. As a result, there have been many organized boycotts across the nation. Clear Channel, the largest owner of radio stations in the United States with more than 1,200 radio stations, pulled the Dixie Chicks from their station's playlists. Clear Channel is also involved with organizing grassroots demonstrations in favor of the war and against anti-war voices. The company's vice chair, Tom Hicks, is a member of the Bush Pioneer Club for Elite and very generous campaign contributors and was once the regent of the University of Texas. During that time, he was responsible for granting endowment management contracts of the newly created under legislation signed by then-Governor George W. Bush, the UT Investment Managing Company. The contracts were given to firms politically connected to both Hicks and Bush, including the Carlyle Group, a firm which was the first President Bush, or has the first President Bush Sr. on the payroll. Now, along with the 1,200-plus radio stations, Clear Channel also owns 36 television stations, 41 amphitheaters, and annually puts on more than 26,000 stage shows, including concerts, Broadway productions, touring productions, and sports and motor events. Now let's take a look at journalism and the threat to the First Amendment. In 1970, Peter Dale Scott, a professor of English at UC Berkeley, published The War Conspiracy. It was a scathing investigation of the CIA and oil companies and their manipulation of U.S. foreign policy in order to escalate the Vietnam War for their own ends. Before the book could be made public, however, the CIA intervened and successfully stopped its release. Vladimir Posner is a Parisian-born Soviet commentator and an international television celebrity who was one of the Soviet Union's leading interpreters of Glasnost and Perestroika and is currently serving as the president of the Russian Academy of Television. In his 1990 autobiography, he had this to say about the art of journalism. He said, quote, "The realities of journalism do not involve just facts, because if they did, computers would replace journalists. Journalism always involves choices, choices among subjects, treatment, words. And as a result, the claim of objective reporting functions simply to camouflage what is in fact a value-laden activity. It is not only the readers who are misled by the claim, the journalists also can be blinded by their own cover." Unquote. Now, in a March 2003 interview with the Russian newspaper Pravda, Posner asserted that, in his view, current Russian television is more liberal and more free than American television. Furthermore, he posited that as far as television was concerned, it is the USA that has the least freedom of speech amid other democratic countries, at least at this moment. Unquote. Now remember, I reported to you last time on the story out of Fox down in Tampa, Florida. Two journalists down there wanted to report on a story. They were fired for trying to report the story. And then when they sued, the courts came back and said, there is absolutely no law in the United States that prohibits a news organization from lying to its listeners. So let's understand. If you're the net sum total of your beliefs and your expressions, which come from what you learn from the news media, then your net sum total beliefs have been skewered, haven't they? So when I ask the question, sex with a virgin cures AIDS, smoking does not cause cancer, global warming causes tidal waves, evolution is an established scientific fact, Christmas is Christ's birthday, vaccination does not prevent disease, paper money is good for the nation's economy, gold and silver coin is bad for the economy, and conversely, paper money is bad for the economy and gold and silver coin is good for the economy. Where did you get your information? Is it the truth? How do you know? How did you measure it? How did you weigh it? So when we come down to the question that we're discussing, the pre-tribulation rapture teaching, did you get your belief out of the Bible, or did you get it from Rupert Murdoch, or did you get it from Roman Catholicism or Judaism or somebody else? Do you even know where it comes from? I would venture a guess and say that the average person who believes in the rapture hasn't got a clue as to where it came from, who originated it, or where he could go today to find out the answer to those questions. All right, we got to take a break here. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, management, or the staff of the network, or of this radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website georgegordon.org or call the Law School 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967, or go to the webpage georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School. The number is 417-273-4967. Hey, let me break in here for a second while we're discussing this thing here of the news media. I'm covering the Nexus magazine article. I'm going to give you that Nexus magazine article webpage again. If you got a pen and paper handy over here, it's worth the 48 pages, the time that it takes to download it. It's a dynamite article. Remember, it's www.nexusmagazine.com. That's www.nexusmagazine.com. Now, the article on the Tampa Fox story came from, it came from the Agricultural Examiner, published by Albert Krebs. And you can get a copy of the Examiner. That's a newsletter, weekly newsletter, free of charge. Isn't that just real special? Free of charge. And if you'll also ask for the Calamity Howler, he'll send you that weekly newsletter also. tell you a couple of stories. Albert Krebs is at earthlink.net. That's A.V. Krebs. This is the email address, avkrebs@earthlink.net. Just send him your email address. Comes right over your computer. Both newsletters come out every week. Now, they're free. He asks for donations. I suggest $25 a month. That's $300 a year. Pay what you can. And a lot of people don't pay anything, and he points that out from time to time, that he's not going to deny you access to the newsletter because you don't have any money or because you don't choose to subscribe. But I recommend both of those. Now, let me tell you a little story here. This is from the Agricultural or Agribusiness Examiner. I guess it's called the Agribusiness Examiner. Yeah, that's what it is. This is the January 4th, 2005 edition. Jane Aker, Steve Wilson. So if you'd like a copy of that article that I cited here, it's the Agribusiness Examiner, January 4th, 2005. It's issue number 387. Issue number 387. If you were to ask for that, I'm sure he'd send it to you. avkrebs@earthlink.net. Now, let me share with you another story that came out of the same issue. The USDA will withhold from release sensitive security information inappropriate for public disclosure. Short article. It says official controls on unclassified information are proliferating in such abundance that there are now two categories of information that are both called sensitive security information, SSI, though each has a different scope and significance. Did you know that the Department of Agriculture has sensitive information? Information that you, as a tax-paying American citizen, should not know. Isn't that just real special? Now, again, I ask the question, how can you formulate knowledge, beliefs, understanding? How can you come to a grasp of truth if you don't have all of the information? And listen, these guys aren't, you know, pulling your leg. They're not hiding it from you. They're telling you pretty plainly, you can't know this. We're not going to tell you. And just because we're public officials and just because we run this public agency over here doesn't mean that you can know what the hell we're doing here. The better known type of sensitive security information, which is broadly defined in statute, has to do with aspects of transportation security that are protected from disclosure. It includes such things as airline and airport security plans, threat assessments, training materials, and so forth. This type of SSI has become a subject of some public controversy because of the expansive interpretation given to the term by the Transportation Security Administration. The TSA has refused, for example, to disclose its legal authority for conducting passenger pat-downs or for requiring passengers to present a photo ID because such information is SSI, the agency says, and it cannot be made public. See the Arrival of Secret Law, Secrecy News, November 14, 2004. But then there is the completely unrelated sensitive security information, SSI, which applies to unclassified but sensitive information in the U.S. Department of Agriculture. It is the policy of USDA to safeguard unclassified but sensitive security information within its control. USDA will withhold from release sensitive information that is not appropriate for public disclosure consistent with laws, regulations, and court decisions according to a USDA regulation. This type of SSI corresponds generally to what is termed for official use only in other agencies. And who's going to decide what it is that you should or should not know? Well, the agency will decide what it is that you should or shouldn't know. Now, isn't that just real special? Well, Gary Webb is a highly decorated journalist in a career that spanned more than 19 years. He was the recipient of more than 30 awards for his journalistic prowess, including the Pulitzer Prize in 1990, the H.L. Mannequin Award from the Free Press Association in 1994, and the Media Heroes Award in 1997. Well, back in 1996, he wrote a series of articles entitled Dark Alliances, which revealed how a U.S.-backed terrorist army, the Nicaraguan Contras, had financed their activities by selling crack cocaine in the ghettos of Los Angeles to the city's biggest crack dealer. It documented direct contact between drug traffickers bringing drugs into Los Angeles and two Nicaraguan CIA agents who were administering the Contras in Central America. Moreover, it revealed how elements of the U.S. government knew about this drug ring's activities at the time and did little, if anything, to stop it. The evidence included sworn testimony from one of the drug traffickers, a government informant that a CIA agent specifically instructed them to raise money for the Contras in California. Now, this article was posted on the website of the newspaper that he worked for, the San Jose Mercury News. And it was quickly read by people all over the world, getting as many as 1.3 million hits in a single day. The fallout from this newspaper article was immense, with the country's three largest newspapers, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Los Angeles Times, putting out stories on web rather than on Webb's article. Never before had the three largest newspapers in America devoted so much energy to kicking the hell out of a story by another newspaper. But why did they do that? Well, primarily because the series presented dangerous ideas. The story suggested that crimes of state had been committed. And if the story was true, it meant that the federal government bore some responsibility, however indirect, for the flood of crack cocaine that coursed through the black neighborhoods in Los Angeles, California back in the 1980s. Now, in February of 2000, the Dutch newspaper Trouw and France's intelligence newsletter reported that the U.S. Army's fourth psychological operations, called PSYOPs, their group at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, worked in the news division at CNN's Atlanta headquarters during the end of the 1999 Kosovo War. Did you get that? The U.S. Army's fourth psychological operations PSYOPs group at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, worked in the news division at CNN. Now, what do you think you're getting out of CNN with the U.S. Army and their psychological operations team editing your news? Well, just imagine what it is that you're getting. Well, in the 1980s, officers from PSYOPs staffed the National Security Council's Office of Public Diplomacy, a shadowy government propaganda agency that planted stories in the U.S. media supporting the Reagan administration's Central American policies. A senior U.S. official described OPD as a vast psychological warfare operation of the kind that the military conducts to influence a population in enemy territory. Published in the Miami Herald, July 19, 1997. Now, in an impressive collection of news reports, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, FAIR showed that in 1998, ABC's World News This Morning, NBC's Today, the Associated Press, the Los Angeles Times, the National Public Radio, CNN, USA Today, and the New York Times, the Washington Post, and Newsday all reported this fact, that the United Nations weapons inspection teams were removed from Iraq by order of the United Nations. However, 4 years later, every one of those sources reported that Saddam Hussein had forced the inspectors out of Iraq. Now, did these newspapers and media outlets forget their own reporting? Or were they consciously assisting the United States government as outlets of propaganda by effectively rewriting history in a way that aided the Bush administration's war aims? What a difference 4 years makes. Now, I'm going to repeat that because I want that to sink in. You know, we have short memories. When we hear a news story, later, that news story may come out again, or we may hear something that's different than the original news story. Well, what should we believe? And can we remember the same news story 4 years from today? Now, remember there was a great argument here concerning this Saddam Hussein and weapons of mass destruction and the United Nations. Now listen to this list of the top news organizations in the United States. I mean, this is the who's who of news. This is the media. This is the mainstream media of America. Now listen to this. In an impressive collection of news reports, fairness and accuracy in reporting showed that in 1998, ABC's World News This Morning, NBC's Today, Associated Press, The Los Angeles Times, National Public Radio, CNN, USA Today, The New York Times, The Washington Post, and Newsday, all of these media outlets reported the fact that the UN weapons inspection teams were removed from Iraq by order of the United Nations. Alright, so in 1998, when the UN inspection teams pulled out, all of these news sources reported to us, and we believed it, I guess. I didn't have any reason not to, did you? They reported to us that the UN ordered them out. All right, now watch what happens 4 years later in 2002. However, 4 years later, every one of those sources reported that it was Saddam Hussein who had forced the inspectors out. Now, did they forget their own reporting, or were they consciously assisting the United States government as outlets of propaganda by effectively rewriting history in a way that aided the Bush administration's war aims? Now, let me bring to your attention the statement that God Almighty himself made in Revelation 12, verse 9. Revelation 12, 9. God himself said that the whole world has been, past tense, the whole world has been deceived. Let me see if I can cite that for you directly here. 12:9, that great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. And he was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Now, is that statement true? Or did God lie to you? You see, we've been told by our preachers and by the evolutionists and everybody that's got a voice that God lies a lot. You can't believe the Bible. You can't believe any of the statements that are in the Bible. They're unscientific. They're written by long-haired, bearded old farts that don't know whether their rectums are bored or punched. I'm not really so sure that that's true. I think maybe we've been getting some bad information. But if that statement is true and the whole world has been deceived, then much of what you and I believe, much, maybe most, maybe nearly all of what we believe really isn't true. And maybe the scripture, when it says that we ought to prove all things and hold fast to that which is good, maybe we ought to re-examine some of these concepts, some of these beliefs. Maybe we ought to think about having sex with a virgin and whether or not that cures AIDS. Maybe smoking does cause cancer. Maybe evolution is not an established scientific fact. Maybe Christmas is not Christ's birthday. maybe vaccination doesn't prevent disease. And maybe paper money is not good for the nation's economy. Maybe gold and silver is better for it. You know, I'm not here to tell you what to believe. I'm just here to tell you that I'm going to cast some doubt on whether or not what you believe really has any basis in fact. Now, last week I covered this concept of the evolutionary philosophy as it relates to the formation of galaxies. There isn't any science in astronomy, or there's so damn little of it that you'd be hard-pressed to find any real science in it. It's got a lot of speculation, a lot of theories, a lot of neat ideas, a lot of Buck Rogers, a lot of science fiction. It's got a lot of interesting concepts and ideas, but they're not scientific. I showed you that last week. Then I showed you, conversely, that the Bible has got a lot of science in it, and it's scientific, and it can all be duplicated and documented in the laboratory. Every scientific statement made in the Bible can be duplicated in the laboratory, and it can be proved today to be true, accurate, and correct. Every one of them. No exceptions. So when I say maybe we'd better start, maybe we should think about these sources of information that we take for granted. You know, like Dan Rather, he's a nice guy, no doubt about it. I like old Dan. And Jim Lehrer on the NewsHour, I like Jim. I listen to him every night. But I'm not sure that Jim Lehrer is always telling me the truth. In fact, I know that Jim Lehrer lies a lot. I don't know whether he knows he's lying or not, but if he does, then he's a damn liar. If he doesn't, then he's just damn dumb. And the same thing with Dan and CBS and a lot of these other news sources. So let me emphasize again this article. This is actually, it's a master's thesis. And I'm only giving you the highlights of it in the context of a story that I'm doing this week on the pre-tribulation rapture. Remember, I don't want to forget the subject matter this week. It's the rapture teaching. But before I complete my rapture story over here, I wanted to bring to your attention that just because 70 million evangelicals believe in the rapture doesn't mean that it's necessarily true. And just because 80 million Germans believe in Adolf Hitler doesn't mean that everything that good old Adolf had to say was necessarily true. Now, in an impressive collection of news reports, we find here that they lied to us concerning Saddam Hussein. Now, I think Saddam Hussein is a jerk, and he's probably a bad guy. But, you know, truth is truth, and lies are lies, and it doesn't make any difference to me whether Saddam Hussein's lying to me or George Bush. When I'm being lied to, I'm being lied to. A lie is a lie is a lie. What the hell difference does it make where it comes from? What I'm looking for is who's got the facts. I can decide after I've got the facts. My brain, my computer works pretty well. I can put the facts together and come to a conclusion. But what I'm faced with is I've got George Bush over here deciding that I need to be guided and directed in the conclusions that I arrive at. And George Bush and the administration and the United States government, along with Saddam Hussein and a lot of other people, are deciding for me what it is that I should hear, what I should know. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is deciding for me that there are some things that I just shouldn't know. Well, isn't that just real special? And George Bush has got the PSYOPs people out here planning news stories, trying to influence me. And I'm sitting here saying to you, do I really need to be influenced? I'd kind of like to come to a conclusion of him by myself. I may agree with George Bush, or I may not agree. Well, in order for reporters to become embedded, they must sign a contract with the government that explicitly requires them to follow the direction and orders of the government and prohibits them from suing for injury or death, even where this is caused or contributed to by the military. They're almost completely controlled by the military, and they agree to give up most of their autonomy in exchange for access to the fighting on military terms. Since the war began, the British populace in general has become more supportive of the war, and of that, British Minister of Defense Jeff Hoon said that the imagery that they embedded, or that they, that is the embedded reporters, broadcast, is at least partially responsible for the public's change of mood. At the end of March 2003, Hoon stated that one of the reasons for having journalists embedded is to prevent precisely the kind of tragedy that occurred to an ITV crew very recently when a journalist was killed, essentially because he was not a part of the military organization. The ITN reporter, Terry Lloyd, and two of his crew, cameraman Fred Narek and local translator Hassan Othman, were killed by friendly fire. They weren't killed by the enemy. They were killed by friendly fire. Boy, that kind of raises a question. You know, were they killed because they were reporting things they weren't supposed to? Now, I've noticed here that the war in Iraq is going badly, and I'm being told every day about that, about how badly the war is going. Well, now that I know that the military controls what's coming out of Iraq, well, then it's the military that is giving us these bad reports out of Iraq. Now, what's the purpose for that? Are they setting us up for the inevitable defeat that we Americans are going to suffer in Iraq? You know, there's a lot that's going on over there, and we're not being told the half of it. And when we get the reports that tell us the other half of it, they don't come from the mainstream media. They don't tell us about all of the schools that are being rebuilt. And of the 18 districts or the 18 states, only four of them are in rebellion. That's the Sunnis. This is the Sunni rebellion. Everybody else in Iraq is going for the elections. You're not being told that. I haven't heard that on the mainstream press. Well, you need to know, and so I'm here to tell you, that not everything that you've heard all of your life about the Bible or politics or religion or economics is necessarily true. But we accept it as true, and our beliefs are extremely personal. We have beliefs that are between our ears, and nobody's going to shake us from a good story. Now, are they? Well, I would contend then that it's time for you and I to start waking up and smelling the coffee. Let's look at the roses and pay attention to what's going on. Now, I got a little bit more. I'm out of time. I'm going to finish this up next time. We'll finish up the article from Nexus, and then we'll get back directly into this concept of the rapture theory, and let's analyze it and see whether or not this rapture has any real substance to it, or if it's just hocus pocus and malarkey. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember that the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals by pre-arrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website. It's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, schedule of archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. All right, there's the signal. Says my time's up. We'll have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. So until then, good night, friends. Yeah.